So we're joined here by Terry and Dermot Layden, who were both involved in Northwest Radio in Drumshambo in County Leitrim. Yeah. So thanks very much for joining us today. Can you just tell us a little bit about yourselves, where you're from, what age you are, or roughly, if you don't give an exact age, where you, where you grew up? And
it's no secret.
Well, he's older. I'll let him go first.
Okay. I suppose I had a funny background. I was actually born in the UK. That time, your parents had to go abroad. Obviously, like, not much different to today, I suppose, in a lot of ways. But I was about four when I came back to Ireland. Okay. And I was always interested in pop music, as it was termed at the time, you know. I always like a thing a guy said to me a couple of years back. Bill Haley on the Comets was on the radio. And there's this guy I knew, he's a little bit old-fashioned, you know, and I said to him, that's good music. They don't make music like that anymore. And he said, I said, I don't like that modern stuff. Now, this was like 2 years ago. And, but I was always into like pop music, and everybody around me was into country and western music.
Yeah.
So I was kind of an exception, you know?
Okay. Even down our way, we call it country and Wellington.
Yeah.
Very good. So, yeah, so Terry, where so you moved back to Ireland. Where did you move back to? To Drumshambo?
Moved back to a little place called Arrigan. It's a mining village in North Roscommon.
Okay, great. And yourself, Dermot, you were born there.
Well, I'm born bread and buttered, as they say in Ireland. I'm the youngest of the family.
Yeah.
And Terry here,
I'm the eldest.
He's the eldest.
Yes, sir.
So I was a bit on the coattails. What happened was that Terry here took an interest in discos. And the discotheque at that time, our mobile disco, was so new. We were very fortunate. We were at the vanguard of what was new. So with discos, this was taken over from live music. The ballroom was starting to fade out, and so we were influenced an awful lot by the pirate radio stations, like Radio Caroline. That was sort of your idea, or how you envisioned yourself sort of when you were on air. Mm-hmm. You were the Emperor Roscoe or somebody like that, doing the pirate radio thing. So it all sort of fitted in together that you were into music, you were into it naturally progressed into the pirate radio, because national broadcasting at that time was very poor, to say the least. There was only a couple of hours of FM stereo with Larry Gogan, you know, and that was your pop music content.
Yeah. It was basically all talk radio at that time. The only thing you had, you could maybe tune into Radio Luxembourg or something like that. But my grandmother had an old radio, a valve radio, and the guy who delivered it set it on Radio Éireann, as it was called at the time. And you daren't touch that, because if you moved it off Radio Éireann, you might never get it back to Radio Éireann. So you were taking your life in your hands, tuning it over to Radio Luxembourg. And you could be given out to, if she found it, if you inadvertently left it on Radio Luxembourg and she didn't know, you see, and she didn't know how to get it back to Radio Éireann, you were in trouble.
And tell us about Northwest Radio then, a little bit about the station. When roughly did it start? Was it AM only or FM as well at a later stage? Where was it based? What were the frequencies?
It was AM only. I forget exactly what the frequency was. Up at the top end.
We're top end 1600 kilohertz.
Something like that.
You were right up the top of the band.
Yeah.
1602 probably.
1602. Something like that.
Yeah. I think that, and it wasn't crystal controlled. It was an LC, which meant that there was never an accuracy in the wave band.
We could start the evening when the transmitter was cool at one frequency and end up at a different one when it got warm.
And we were skip waving, and that's why the chap come here.
Yes.
That they were. We were heard better in Scotland than we were 100 metres down the road.
Yeah.
Okay.
That, you know, and what we used to do, the DJs at that time, you talk about health and safety. We had a fluorescent tube on the radio aerial. Because, you know, the ordinary fluorescent tube will react with the radio signal. And it lights up to show you that you're transmitting. That was our idea.
That was our test.
You know, that was your test. And that and a certain amount of sizzling and RF on the turntable.
Well, I have to give credit to the guy, really, who was the instigator of the whole thing. A lad called Tony Tye.
Yeah.
And another part of the puzzle was that his brother was a TV technician and he had a TV repair shop. So he was into the electronics and could work on the transmitters and do all that kind of stuff. And then Tony himself was an ardent country and western fan. He would be quite a good close friend of Pascal Mooney. I'm sure you've heard of Pascal.
Indeed, yeah. Senator as well.
Senator, yeah. So it was really Tony's baby, and he initiated it, and it would have been initially totally country and western music.
Because what years are we talking about, Terry?
It's around 80, I'd say. 79, 80 would it be?
Yeah, the radio station, actually, it's amazing. All of these things, it's nearly like the arms trade at that time, pirate radio transmitters, because they moved around the same way as the Africans will buy, nations will buy off each other when there's a war on. Our transmitter originated in Sligo with Radio Sligo, and they moved from AM over to FM because it was more popular, and they have a very powerful FM transmitter just on Trustmore Mountain outside Sligo. So that medium wave transmitter came because Tony Tye that started the Radio Northwest, he was doing a program in Sligo. That station sold on its equipment, upgraded the studio for FM.
And sold you the AM.
And we took the AM with us.
Do you know what the power of the AM was?
There were EL34 valves, so you're talking, they were about what? 20 watt, 25 watts each.
25 watts, that's small.
Well, there'd be four of them. They'd be about 100 watts,
something like that.
So it was quite low power then, really.
Yeah. It was very low power, yeah. And you're talking about the efficiency of it. You know, our aerial wouldn't have been quite that long, and that was one of the reasons why you went for the short frequency, because a shorter aerial.
That's right.
So we actually were using a TV aerial, which was about 100 foot mast, with an aerial draped over it, you know.
Yeah,
So
Tony Tye, you said, was the guy who set it up.
Yes.
And Tony, unfortunately, was actually electrocuted afterwards, erecting a CB antenna.
After the station goes down?
Or no, during the time the station was on, was around,
Did it survive? Did the station survive that?
It did survive that. His brother took the mantle in, and Brian Tye.
What was his brother's name?
Brian.
Brian Tye.
Sadly deceased as well since now, but
Were you on air up to 1988, were you? Did you stay on air until the end?
No. We went off air about 84.
Something like that.
Yeah. It fizzled out because what happened was, you know, without the man that started it, Tony was the driving force.
Yeah. Yeah.
And we all started to, you know, move, go kind of different directions. But it was great community spirit. It was the station broadcast in the evenings. So we came on air at 7 in the evening and broadcast till 10. On the weeknights, and then we were on from about 2 in the afternoon to about 7 in the evening on the Saturday and Sunday. So
sometimes on weekends we used to do special broadcasts. I remember we did ones for the Wheelchair Association and multiple sclerosis, and we would have like marathons or fundraisers or things like that, you know.
Yeah. It was kind of, that was the thing. We were doing new stuff, like we would record masses on reel to reel. We'd go to a nightclub and we'd have a disco night to raise funds for the radio station, and we'd record that
and play that back, actually, as a programme.
So were you very broad then in your focus? Was it mostly community, or were you commercial as well, or what was the focus of the station?
It's a bit of everything. It's whatever kind of... We had everyone and anyone come in doing the programme.
I suppose it started off as a community thing, and then, of course, the realisation is then that you need funding, you know.
Yeah.
So then... Tony, actually, being friendly with Pascal Mooney, ran some functions in a local hotel using country and western bands that Pascal obviously had connections with or whatever, to raise some funds for the station, you know.
And was it voluntary then, or did anybody get paid?
No, it was voluntary.
Totally voluntary. Yeah. Okay. Actually, the station started off for a festival on Postal. And it was sort of a celebration of Ireland. That was
interesting enough, the particular festival, I think the Toastal Festival was a government initiative way back. Don't quote me on this, but I think it was.
Yes.
To promote Irish traditional music and whatever, or culture. And I think a lot of towns around Ireland had a Toastal Festival. But I think Pascal Mooney's father, Joseph Mooney, he championed it, and I think Drumshambo ended up the epitome of the Thurston Festival, and it's still run to this day.
Okay.
Every year.
Yeah, we just started. I mean, to give you an idea of the original setup, I remember the original setup for the radio station. When you talk about broadcasting standard, we brought a medium wave transmitter into a town.
Oh. Yeah.
And basically, it was earthed to the sink, and the aerial was out the front, draped down the front of the building. And if you put your hand on the turntables, they would stop because of the radiation that was coming off, the RF radiation off the transmitter. I had a digital watch, it stopped. We nearly time traveled, I think. It was like chemo radio.
Yeah.
It was mad. And, you'd have everyone and anyone.
No, actually, there's another story involved there. Tony, who was the champion of the radio station, a teetotaler, never drank in his life, pioneer. And he actually got done for after hours in a pub on a Sunday because he was doing a broadcast from the pub. That was one of the ironic things about the whole thing.
It had nothing got to do with the fact we were broadcasting.
No.
It was the fact that somebody had a pint while they were doing it.
Was it just country music then mostly, or did you have did you play a variety of music?
We had every genre. We were the pop guys because, we were into the pop music. But that would be more in the minority. It was a combination of country and traditional music. And Tony, with the fact that he was very influenced by American country.
Yes, American country was Tony's thing.
And it was very popular in the locality. We had a guy who used to do a program called Kjolna Shaktina. And Tony
Gilluli. Yeah.
And that was hugely popular.
He was, yeah.
And you'd have guys sending in. You go back now, there was no Snapchat or Instagram. It was a letter, came in, and they would write a poem about the radio station and this sort of thing. And we moved in. The station had amazing sort of venues. We moved from a pub to a holiday cottage that had no roof. And we were waiting for this place to get thatched. There was just felt on it, and you would freeze. We used to be when you play a record, you'd run in and try and warm yourself in front of the fire, to warm up in between stuff. And then we got the back of a lorry, and we built a purpose-built studio in that. And when the DX Archive was visiting, that's where I'm photographed doing the show. And we had actually a very nice little studio at that stage.
We
become sophisticated. We had a very good broadcast studio with everything from we could edit on the reel-to-reel at the time. We had a separate recording studio.
We had a room for doing our adverts while the programs were going on. So
we had jingle players and that. No,
we never did news.
We never did news at that stage. We just didn't have the resources. And I don't think it really occurred to us.
Well, we were sort of breaking the mold, and news seemed to be part of the mold. So we just wanted to do something different. We just looked at news as being fuddy-duddy, old-fashioned stuff,
Yeah. Have we ever raided or jammed or anything like that?
No, not at that radio station. It really, I suppose, it was low power, and we weren't really causing friction. We you can see that with the attitude. If it's in the west of Ireland,
I think the only
doesn't count.
The only restriction I ever seen was the local newspaper started to refuse to take adverts. They were advised not to use any adverts.
Okay.
As far as I remember, there was a government directive.
Okay.
Not to, or maybe it was their own decision. I don't know.
Okay.
But
so you weren't around in 1988 then when the close downs took place? You had already fizzled out before?
No, we were not on that station. No. I continued on in Pirate Radio, and that's why I would be meeting people like Gerry O'Reilly there, where I used to give a long-winded story, but the valves for the transmitters were very hard to obtain. And I'd have an interest from that Radio Northwest. We used to have to go out and actually tune the transmitter during the programme. You could know you were losing power. And there's a way when a transmitter is actually transmitting on full power, you get a dip in the amp voltage, amps on the transmitter. You probably don't need to speak into the choir. But we would have to dip this transmitter during the programme because it would have drifted so far off
frequency.
The frequency, yeah? Mm-hmm. So you'd have to catch up with it. And I got a knowledge of that, and I branched out then and started my own radio station. And we were involved in another town. We were involved in Sligo. We ran on medium wave there, which, to be honest about it, was a mistake.
What station was that?
We ran, we were called West Coast Radio, and it was a very short-lived radio station that had a very colourful sort of history. We started off, and we were talking about the movie, but it did happen with us. Our programmes, where the radio output was being picked up by the PA system in the local church. So the priest would be trying to say a mass, and there was a headline in the Sligo Champion, rocking all over the church, where status quo are blasting out during the sermon. A lot of people, of course, loved it. They thought it was the first kind of, if this is a new direction for the church. We had, we were raided on that station, but it had nothing got to do with, as such, with policy. It was the fact that our FM transmitter was interfering with the radio signal for Sligo Airport. And
that was a common complaint.
That was a common, wasn't it,
yeah.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
And you couldn't argue that much, because we used an FM transmitter which was low power and then a linear amplifier on the output, which meant that you had harmonics
all over the place.
All over the shop. Yeah. And there was none of us. We might have been good enough, you know, to put these things together in biscuit tins, as I've seen. But when it came down to fine-tuning something like that, and anyway, the equipment wasn't that
okay.
Wasn't that hectic.